Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Here.
Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Here.
Representative Bowe? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Next, we'll move on to the approval of the March 3rd minutes. Representative Moeller, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. So first up on the agenda today, we have House File 1376. Welcome back, Representative Frazier. Would you like to make your motion?
I would. I'd actually like to amend the prior motion that I had to lay over, and I'd like to amend that motion to refer this bill to the Education Finance Committee as amended.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So we're going to continue with a member discussion, and I will kick us off here, Representative Frazier. You know, we're hearing some concerns that with this bill that teachers would be pushed out of the classroom. How do you respond to those concerns?
Thank you, Chair. That's a great question. And I do believe that Yelena Bailey is here from Pelsman. I would like her to address this question.
Ms. Bailey.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this question. We have also heard those concerns, and you know, we understand them. And I think we respond by saying that in no way this bill would not push a single person out of the classroom. It would need some changes, but ultimately this bill is a package that works together to push teachers up the tier system rather than out of it. And so I just want to kind of reiterate that what this bill adds to kind of the existing structures is mentorship and professional development that would actually promote retention, which we have research that shows that's actually the biggest issue, not just in our state, but nationwide. When it comes to keeping teachers in our classrooms. So this bill actually does a lot to do the opposite of pushing teachers out.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. A quick follow-up, within this bill is, can you talk through sort of what will help teachers of color?
Absolutely. I think on Monday we heard, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you, sorry. So I think, you know, on Monday we heard some great testimony, and I think all around in stakeholders and legislators, we share this common goal of increasing teachers of color and Indigenous teachers in the state. But, you know, what this bill addresses is how we do that. What we don't want to see and what, you know, is concerning about the current kind of numbers around tier licensure is a kind of a rotating door of burned out tier one and tier two teachers of color. So what this bill does is by requiring that all teachers, including teachers of color, get that mentorship and professional development to move them up the tiers, to help them when they're in their early career on that, you know, tier three license, and the continuing, you know, development, professional development support would make sure that they aren't just filling kind of that immediate need for districts, but that these individuals are being supported as they move up the tiers and continue to thrive in their career. So again, it would speak to that question of retention for teachers of color and really focuses not just on increasing our percentage, but in supporting those actual educators in their careers. The bill has other provisions, you know, such as ensuring that all teachers get cultural competency training. We have a lot of research that shows that a big issue for teachers of color staying in the profession is their school climate. And so that speaks to that as well. And then, you know, this bill, I mentioned, you know, kind of a universal piece that has been supported is the BA exemption for those in visual performing arts and world languages would bring a whole host of new teachers of color into our classrooms as well. And again, ensure that they're supported as they move up the tiers. So that's one of, I think, a few provisions. And one final one I'll mention is we've also, this bill contains provisions that would support an easier transfer for educators trained outside of the state. So we've had, you know, including the increased Teachers of Color Act and other provisions emphasize that there are teachers of color in other states who would love to come here, but we need to ease that transfer. So this provision would actually support them so that their experience and their training in other states would easily and readily transfer so they can immediately get, if they have that teaching experience, a tier four license here. And the final piece is that we know there is a lot of research that shows that testing in particular has been a barrier for teachers of color. And so this bill, I think we mentioned on Monday, would move that content and pedagogy desk from tier three to tier four. And what that would do was then allow those teachers to have add another 3 years on a tier three to get the support they need to pass that content and pedagogy exams, while also ensuring because they've completed teacher prep, you know, and or portfolio, they've demonstrated them at state standards, they can get that tier three license. So if they've completed teacher prep but not passed exams, it lets them get that tier three license. And that would go a long way to moving those teachers and allowing them access to jobs in a number of districts.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some historical background. It was in 2016 that the Office of Legislative Auditor provided us with a comprehensive audit of what was then a combined system between the Department of Education and the Board of Teaching. And the criticisms were very direct and very specific. And April of 2016, I offered a working group bill introduction that began the process of reform to a very complicated teacher licensure system that the candidates had such a hard time understanding, and those who were already in the field were frustrated. So that fall, a working group met. It was a bipartisan working group. At the end of our many meetings, we came up with recommendations and agreed on those. We had testimony from many groups, including Education Minnesota, and we proceeded then in the beginning of the session in 2017 to draft a bill. And I believe that Representative Fraser was working for Ed Minnesota then, so I think he knows that, you know, when this bill was heard in committee, and there were actually two different bills because eventually the bill was included in the omnibus bill, but this bill had 100 different changes along the way. Because if Education Minnesota raised an issue, my team and I considered a change, and that team consisted of senators as well as House members. And we worked the language so that we could reach consensus. We had Minnesota School Boards Association, MREA, AMSD, the public engaged, And there wasn't anyone who was left out in offering suggestions how to make this proposal better. And eventually it was signed by Governor Mark Dayton. I worked closely with the department at that time in figuring out how we could make just a new board that would control everything and not go back and forth between issuing licenses and determining what a license could be or to whom it should be issued. So, you know, this reform has really worked its way in the proper manner, engaging many and bringing about so many changes. As I said, 100 different changes were made before this bill went to Governor Dayton for signature. And that shows that if you work together and you get lots of input, you can come up with a really great product. So now it seems that this new board, PELSVE, is trying to undo that even when it's still in its infancy. The changes that are recommended in this policy bill from PELSVE is much too political. And when we did the reform of teacher licensure, it was not political. It was very balanced between all of those who were intervening with ideas. And this I see as a way to push out a reform that's still working, that still needs years to be tested and not have to be dumped in the trash, so to speak, by these changes that are recommended. In fact, PELSVE would be start new rulemaking in this bill. And I just got notice that they've completed rulemaking. So, I mean, there are just confusing things in this proposal that bother me because we have established this system and it's working. So my first question to Representative Fraser is, what benefit is there in closing off pathways for teachers of color to enter and remain in the classroom? What benefit is there to do that?
Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Erickson, I'm going to let PELSVE staff respond to this. This is an agency bill, so I will let them respond. But I will say this. I know how much work you put into this bill. I was around then, and I've also been in education for over a decade. So I've been following these situations and these issues. There's no doubt that this tier licensure system has opened up the process and allowed more folks to come in. I mean, there was a point where you could not teach within our schools without a license. So this does provide that opportunity. But what I will say is that, I took it to heart when in the last meeting, last committee meeting, when you said you had questions for me, and I did reach out to you, and I felt it was important because I knew how much you worked on this bill. But I will say, you did not want to have that conversation. So I hope we have time enough in this committee to have the conversation, and I hope we can answer the questions. But I was hoping we could be collaborative to talk about this. I wanted to say that piece because I am about collaboration, and I do think this is so important for our kids, and it's also very important for our educators, and particularly our educators of color. And I'll let Ms. Bailey speak to why this is important to have the resources for support and mentoring and create good cultures for the retention piece.
Ms. Bailey.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Richardson, Representative Erickson for those questions. I'd like to respond to both, but, you know, first I'd like to say that we absolutely acknowledge that there is a lot of good work that this current tiered structure does. And this bill is really about continuing that work and, again, strengthening it based off of what we've seen over the last 3 years. So, you know, you all as a legislature have delegated certain work to PELSVE to do the day-to-day work of, you know, talking and engaging with stakeholders, continuing that work that you mentioned, which we have been doing. We've been meeting since, you know, last summer we began having discussions about these things and what people are observing and seeing in their classrooms and what concerns teachers have. So all of this has equally come out of that continued engagement and work. And I think you've highlighted that it's difficult because you have a wide variety of stakeholders and needs to consider. And that's why this really is a bill that is a package, right? That makes, you know, certain changes here with adjustments here. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, this bill keeps the system intact and just makes adjustments to strengthen it. And also to, you know, what we've heard from the majority of our stakeholders who are teachers to really value their profession as one that is about, you know, yes, content and passion for children, but also recognizing the skill that it takes to translate that passion and that content knowledge into lessons that take into consideration child development and the very specific skills that the teaching profession demands. So, you know, we absolutely value the work that you've done, and we have continued that as best as we can. I do want to speak to the question you raised about teachers of color. And, you know, again, we share the desire and the need to have more teachers of color in this profession, in our classrooms. We know there's plenty of research that shows it's good for everyone, but especially students of color. But really, this is about not just getting those numbers and those people on paper as percentages, but about the existence that they have within the profession. So the provisions in this bill that provide them with mentorship and professional development, that provide them with better school climate so their colleagues have a better understanding of working with them. Again, these are about keeping them in the profession. So it's about the quality of their existence in the classroom and not just kind of getting them in there number-wise. So I think for us, it's just an approach that for us really is about centering the equity and them being able to move up those tiers and have the adequate training so they can stay and thrive. And then the last thing, you know, I did bring with us our rulemaking specialist, and you mentioned kind of rulemaking. I'd be happy to either me or have her share if you'd like a little bit about that. But we have a rotating schedule of rulemaking that's kind of part of state agency work in general. But the rulemaking in this bill in particular is focused mostly around those renewal requirements. And so I just wanted to clarify that. And that came out of, you know, we've had people ask us, I'd love more clarity about, you know, what's being done out there and what are these criteria and knowing what to look for in renewal requirements and things like that, particularly around what we propose for those early career tier three teachers, those things they need to know in those first few years. So I just wanted to clarify that. And if you'd like, I'm happy to have our rulemaking specialist elaborate, but I'll end there.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Ms. Bailey, I disagree with you on many of the points you've made, because, you know, you can put frosting on the cake, but unless you get to the crux of some of our issues in what's happening to our teacher candidates, you have to scrutinize teacher preparation programs. And I know that the standards of effective practice, which I helped put in place when I served on the Board of Teaching, and I tell you that was a very difficult move to make, to acknowledge that there were standards of effective practice that all teacher prep programs should include in their curriculum for teacher candidates. But, you know, as I read through these, as they're getting ready, again, to be finalized, I don't see in my discussions with teacher candidates that these are even being followed. And I know as a board member, I had to evaluate teacher prep programs. And I think that would be better served if Pelsby would focus on that, because that's where the beginning of a career begins, whether it's an alternative pathway or it's a teacher prep program, which I know Pelsby prefers through the colleges. You need to put your focus in a different place and just lay off making some of these changes that are going to confuse our candidates. But I have a question, Madam Chair, that I want to ask. I was going to ask Representative Fraser, who wanted to talk about this privately, but this is a public issue. So this discussion needs to take place publicly. As he said, this is not his bill anyway. This is the Pelsby bill. So, you know, he'd be turning to Representative or to Ms. Bailey anyway. But why repeal the provisions that use teacher effectiveness to move through the tiered system? Ms. Bailey, why is Pelsby doing that?
Ms. Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Richardson, Representative Erickson, I'm not sure what you mean, the measures of effectiveness. Can you point to specifically what you mean by that?
In my initial comment, the standards of effective practice are what's used in our teacher prep programs. And that is before the Board of Teaching right now. I just read the statement from the ALJ about the standards of effective practice. But Pelsby needs to be focusing on whether or not teacher prep programs are following through. I mean, look at where we are with literacy. The standards of effective practice include elements that ensure that our teacher candidates know how to teach reading based on a scientific method, like that that Letters promotes. And that seems to be ignored. Anyway, I want to just know why teacher effectiveness is repealed from the tiered system.
And I will just note that we have a number of hands up as well. So we're going to have to move on as well. But Ms. Bailey, to Representative Erickson's question.
Yeah, Chair Richardson, Representative Erickson, I think I know what you're referencing. So it's kind of two separate things here.
Yes, it's two separate things.
Yes, I was looking at what you meant by repealing effectiveness. And I think you're referring to the personnel evaluations, which
yes.
Tier four, which that's a separate issue. So first, let me speak to, you know, I absolutely would agree with you. Standards of effective practice are important. I mean, that's very much the crux of a lot of what's in this proposal is that these are the standards for the teaching profession. And we are going through rulemaking right now. And that is a collaborative process that we have invited stakeholders across the state to engage in. Again, that's why they're so important, because these are professionals coming together to develop these, right, and to revise them. We, you know, yes, we are a small agency with a staff of 22, but we are willing and able to do multiple things at once. And so we are working on this. We are working, I have a rulemaking specialist who leads the work around the standards of effective practice. So we are doing all of the above. And so I don't think it's an either or. I think we would agree with you that both are important, and so we're doing both. To your second question, we are not, removing measures of effectiveness. In fact, that's what the standards of effective practice are. However, and I mentioned this on Monday, the summative evaluation that's mentioned in Tier 4, we kind of pose this question. What this bill really brings to is, you know, that is a great tool, a personnel tool for teachers and for districts, but it's not a standardized licensure tool. And so that is the reason why that was moved. It's still a great tool, again, for personnel, for development on that level, but it has no correlation to kind of national standards or state standards as a licensure tool. And so that's why that was the proposal was to change that.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. And final comments, Representative Erickson. I'll just note that we have a number of hands up on this as well.
Well, Ms. Bailey, I would say that the National Council on Teacher Quality would disagree with you, and also on testing, on eliminating testing or insulting various teacher candidates that they're not capable of passing tests, content, pedagogy, or even basic skills. I've been looking through the national data, and every time Minnesota takes a step backward, we get downgraded in our reputation as a state that holds up high standards for our teacher candidates. So why we're going in that direction, I do not understand, because I consider every candidate capable of passing a content test, a pedagogy test, a basic skills test, you know, which has to do with reading and writing. And we want our teachers to, as I recall much testimony years ago, we want our teachers to be examples to our students, that they understand how to read and express themselves as they deliver their lessons, and also can write either their comments or their smart board remarks or whatever it might be. So we're moving away from something that is basic and so important. Well, my last question is, what's an example of good cause? Because Monday, good cause came up. And I'm wondering, what is a good cause in Tier 1? What is a good cause?
Ms. Bailey.
Yeah, Chair Richardson and Representative Erickson, that's a great question. So good cause can mean a number of things. A few things outlined are, you know, if someone is enrolled in teacher prep or working on the portfolio and needs more time on their their Tier 2 license, if they're unable to pass certain exams, if there's not a program available to them in their, you know, geographic region, there might be instances where, again, a district is cannot fill a position, and so good cause is to renew something. I mean, a lot of what you heard in testimony on Monday and the concerns are covered by good cause. And so I'm actually thankful for the opportunity to reiterate that the good cause is there for Tier 1 and Tier 2. So there are a number of extenuating circumstances that may mean renewing beyond, you know, those kind of automatic renewals. If I may, I just, you know, quickly want to address, and I don't usually enforce this because I, you know, don't want to be that person. But I, you know, I am Dr. Bailey, I have a PhD. And so I just want to emphasize that what, in terms of standards, we absolutely agree that standards matter, but the standards of effective practice are collaboratively created in a way that is more equitable, where there is a host of research. And I say this both as my role as director of education policy, as well as a researcher with a PhD, that there is ample national research that shows that that testing is not an effective measure, and that it does you know, exhibit bias for teachers of color and Indigenous teachers. So I wanted to clarify, I guess, why we've kind of approached those two differently, but do emphasize we share your value of having a standard that people meet.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey, and my apologies for that. Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say, you know, I haven't been at the legislature for a long time, but have been an attorney for 20 years. And I know that we are often looking at laws again that were enacted in the past because they need tweaking. It's no offense to the law as created. It's just we realize when things aren't working as we anticipated. And so that's a very common thing for us to be considering those kinds of efforts. I also want to just thank Dr. Bailey and Representative Frederick Frazier for your work on this. I guess one of the questions I had really has to do with the stakeholders that you've engaged with during this process. I know that this isn't something that was just pulled out of thin air, and I'd like to hear more about that.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. And again, noting that we've got several hands up, I'm gonna hold you to one question here. Dr. Bailey.
Yes, thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Moeller. So as I mentioned, we've been working with stakeholders over the past several years, but this bill that you see before you, we began early summer meeting with various groups and, you know, on more than one occasion, we've met with, you know, administrators and, you know, teacher organizations and advocacy groups. And we've taken the time to listen to the areas that, you know, even when they're all not in agreement with one another, you know, where is there overlap? Where are things that can be modified to meet specific needs of different groups while still comprehensively representing the interests of teachers and the profession? And so this did involve months and months and months of stakeholder engagement to get to this point. And I think a good example of that is with CTE. There are a majority of items in this bill have universal support, but not everything, right? It's hard to get those many groups all on the same page about every single thing. So the changes before you to, you know, clarify the role of the tiered system and to make, you know, tier three about meeting those state standards and tier two about being enrolled in prep demonstrating content expertise with an MA, those were in the original kind of proposal. But then we had CTE representatives reach out to us and say, you know, CTE is a unique kind of facet, right? And while, you know, we may have different views about these other items in your bill, we're particularly worried that we won't be able to demonstrate content expertise with a master's. And because many people, the value of CTE is their continued work in their vocation, some of them may pursue a tier three or tier four license, which they absolutely can do in this bill through licensure via portfolio or through teacher prep. But some of them don't do that, right? They continue to work part-time because they are full-time in their profession, and that's what they're bringing to the classroom. And so after hearing that feedback, that was an example where we made a revision and we said, that makes perfect sense. Content expertise for a CTE educator looks different, right? That's why the tiered system allows for not having a bachelor's degree. So we made the modification to say, if they meet the CTE qualifications and have those, you know, 2 years of teaching experience, they can qualify for a tier two under this proposal. And they can renew on unlimited time because it's a different scenario for them in terms of being in the classroom and in their field full time and bringing that vocational, knowledge to the classroom So some of them may stay on that tier two where others may move up. So I think that's just one example of how we've kind of negotiated and worked with different stakeholders to incorporate their needs in, you know, kind of a mosaic way, I'll put it that way.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Moving on to Representative Erdahl, I'm going to have to limit you to one question or comment here.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Unless, of course, I combine two questions into one, but I'll try not to do that. First of all, I'm from what I've heard, from what I've read, from the opinions of impacted teachers, and even Dr. Bailey in talking about numbers versus quality, I'm still of the firm impression that this is going to cost teachers of color their positions, and that remains a really big concern of mine. But my question is, actually, I think it'd be to you, Chair Richardson, in looking at the bill and the board membership, Minnesota State educates 50% of our teachers, and I was one of them. How about if we give Chancellor Malhotra and President Gabel each an appointment to the Pelsby board? Would you consider that, Chair Richardson?
Representative Erdahl, the bill that is up, House File 1376, is where we're at. And so if you have a question for Representative Frazier or for Dr. Bailey, happy to help facilitate that. But we also have other hands up as well.
I just wanted to know if an appointment of the presidents of the Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota to Pelsby Board would be a proper appointment. Maybe Dr. Bailey would answer that.
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, I think that would actually be, appointments are up to the governor's office. And so, well, we have kind of the carve outs and statute of which the roles there are, and they would probably fit under some of those roles. That would be a question for the governor's office, for the appointments office.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Thank you. Next up, I think we had Representative Drazkowski. Representative, you are muted and
I've recovered, Madam Chair.
Okay, and we'll be limiting folks to one question here. We need to move.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question's for Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier, did you prepare this bill or did the executive branch prepare it?
Representative Frazier.
Representative Drazkowski, thank you for that question. No, I did not prepare this bill. This is a Pelsby bill. It's an agency bill.
Thank you. And then
Madam Chair, I've got a related comment to that. A very short question it was, of course.
Representative Drazkowski, I will limit you to about 20 seconds here. We've got other hands that are up.
Okay. Well, Representative Frazier, members, here we go again. Another board, another executive branch written bill that includes giving the executive branch additional rulemaking authority, giving the executive branch increases in fees. This is not the way we should be legislating. This is another example of more lazy legislating. Not only this legislature is involved in, but past legislatures have been involved in. If we continue to do this and have the executive branch write our laws, the legislature is going to continue to become weaker, and we are not going to be fulfilling our mission or constitutional obligations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Last question, Representative Bennett, I'm going to have to limit you to one question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I only have one question. So, you know, earlier this week, we heard a lot of testimony from the stakeholders, from teachers who are in the tiered system, from administrators and other school personnel, of how much these changes would hurt the system. And my question is, I haven't really heard what this bill is fixing. What is the problem? Because typically, you know, if we're tweaking things, we're tweaking problems. I haven't been hearing problems from my constituents. So what is the problem that we are fixing in this bill, please? I'm not sure who wants to answer that.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Frazier, would you like to respond, or Dr. Bailey?
We'll let Dr. Bailey chime in.
And Dr. Bailey, I'm going to limit you to 20 seconds.
Chair Richardson and Representative Bennett, just quickly, there's a lot of good the tiered system does, but there are some problems we found, such as getting people in the classroom and not providing them the support necessary to move up the tiers. That would be one kind of problem that we're looking to fix. And then there's larger problems of the way that teaching profession is valued and recognized. And that's another problem that this bill is looking to fix. Those are two quick things, and I don't have time.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Last word on the bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all for your questions. You know, just from the theme of this conversation, there seems to be some concerns about lowering the excellence or the qualifications of what we're doing. But this bill is about facilitating more excellence. I think Dr. Bailey being here today and the way that she's presented herself and addressed these questions is an example of that excellence. We are absolutely, what Pillsbury is absolutely committed to is making sure that teachers of color have the supports and the resources that they need so they can be excellent. Our students deserve that. Those educators that want to be in this profession deserve that. We're losing people because we don't have that. And this bill goes a long way to help provide that. So I renew my motion, and I hope you all support it.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier renews his motions to re-refer House File 1376 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe, excused. Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Adelson? Representative Adelson? Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
Poston, no.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Representative Adelson?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and thank you, Representative Frazier. You are on your way to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 161. Representative Fisher, I will move House File 161 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. Representative Fisher, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and committee, for the opportunity to present House File 161. This is a relatively simple, short bill. It would require that school districts, charter schools, public or non-public schools, to notify school staff, students, parents, when it receives notice of environmental hazards from the Department of Health or the Pollution Control Agency. This is based on an issue that happened up in our district, up in our area in White Bear Lake, where there was large contamination for many years of a cancer-causing agent. And it was very difficult. There was a school in the local area. It was very difficult for notices to get out. So this, number one, provides clarity. Number two is that the way the system is set up right now is that when things like this occur, they happen very quickly. Notice usually gets out in the mainstream media very quickly. So people who are English-speaking, et cetera, are going to have a better opportunity to be aware of the situation, where if you have large communities at a school that are non-English speaking, the schools are going to have those resources to be able to get that communication to happen directly in the basic language that the parents are used to, which is very important when you've got a very diverse school that's impacted. And in addition to that is because many times that people in some of the schools are working multiple jobs, they're not going to see the stuff coming through the mainstream media. This gives another opportunity to make sure that the clarity is there for the school to be reaching out to their students, their parents, and their staff to make sure they're aware of it. And letting them know is, here's the issue, here's where you can get more information, here's where hearings may be occurring. I do have a testifier with me today. They'll talk a little bit about what happened up in our area and explain it, talk a little bit more about the issue.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. We will go to your testifier. I believe it's Sherry Smith. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Smith. I'm a member, or I'm a resident of the White Bear Lake area. And unfortunately, what has come to define my life over the last 2 years is my location in relation to the Water Gremlin plant. I'm just a quarter mile from the facility. I'm part of the citizen group called NCCG, or Neighborhood Concerned Citizens Group. I also, unfortunately, know more about TDCE, lead, hazardous waste, and permitting through the MPCA than I ever imagined that I would know. Our group continues to work to make right what went so wrong here in our community for more than 17 years. Some information indicates that Water Gremlin was violating the confines of their permit since 1995, and that's 26 years, okay? Today, we're hoping to see amendments to existing legislation that will help set things back on a correct path. One of the things that we hope to require is that MPCA and MDH notify everyone in an impacted area about the exposure. Okay, so we learned that MPCA and MDH had no obligation to notify those who are not deemed residents, right? In the red and orange zone, it's a map of the impact where the most profound TCE exposure occurred. There's two elementary schools, all right? Students were exposed, educators were exposed, but neither students or their families nor the educators were notified of the toxic pollution that tainted the air, the water, and the soil in the White Bear Lake area for years and years, somewhere between 17 and 26 years. So both students and their families, staff, or educators deserve to have been notified about the exposure to TCE and other toxic chemicals. This just really makes no sense. We as a citizen group were repeatedly asked why or how all those impacted were not notified. We had no good answer. We had no valid reason. And I'm here today, hopefully, to fix that. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Smith, for your testimony. Is there anyone else that is logged on to the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, member discussion. Seeing none, Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, my internet's a little bit glitchy today. Just want to thank Representative Fisher for bringing this bill forward. I represent constituents in the affected area as well, and know these concerns exist and want to do what we can to make sure that folks are being notified when these sort of things happen. So thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing this forward and to folks participating.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, I'll give you the last word.
Thank you very much, Chair Richardson. I want to first of all thank my testifier and the group that she is with. They've done outstanding work. Part of the reason we've got this legislation working is because of the hard work that they've done to help educate and help us find where the issues are that need to be corrected. I think it's a very simple, straightforward bill that can help prevent a lot of problems in the future. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. House File 161 is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. And thank you, Representative Fisher, once again. Next up on the agenda, we have House File 1617. Vice Chair Hassan, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File, 1617. To be referred to Committee in Education Finance.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. I believe that you have an author's amendment. Would you like to take that up now to get the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move that amendment, please?
I move, yes. So moved, Madam Chair.
Any discussion to the amendment?
Can I quickly explain what the amendment does?
Yes, Vice Chair, please do.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this amendment is just adding the way that the original bill was written, that was that it was going to be an online course. And it's adding either online course or hybrid or in-person course, just to be sure that there are more chances that kids can take this class.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Any discussion to the amendment? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Representative Hassan, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I first want to thank everyone for this opportunity, for lending me your ears for a few minutes while I address an issue that is important to our students, which is teaching them about personal finances. House File 1617 deals with an online or in-person or hybrid personal finance course class required for high school graduation. I wanted to thank Representative Scott for being a co-author on this bill, and I invite the rest of you guys to join me. With the unprecedented year that we had last year, all the changes that we expected our students to adapt to, and all the challenges that they were faced with. When we talked to our students over the summer, the few things that they have said to us were they want a balanced education. They want to add more courses that make their education meaningful, and those courses were personal finances, ethnic studies, as well as civic studies. Our students deserve to get a well-rounded education and be ready for the real world when they finish high school. It's imperative that our students learn basic personal finance skills, as it is one of the most important things that you can do to live a healthy, happy, and secure life. Their level of understanding around the fundamentals of budgeting, saving, debt, and investing will impact every part of their life and can mean the difference between poverty and prosperity. I was surprised to find out that only 17 states require personal finance as part of the high school graduation. High school teaches our students geometry, art, and history. While all of those are important subjects for our students, but think about it, how often does one need to calculate the area of trapezoid? Here's the breakdown on how parents are feeling about teaching our students personal finance. 30% of parents believe that it should be included in elementary education. 33% of our parents believe that it should be included in middle school education. 32% of our parents believe that it should be included in high school education. And only 5% of parents believe that it should be included in college education. There are so many reasons why we should require our students to learn about personal finances. Consider this data. More than 189 million Americans have credit cards. The average credit card holder have at least 4 credit cards. On average, each household with a credit card carries $8,398 in credit card debt. Total U.S. consumer debt is $13.86 trillion. That includes mortgage, auto loans, credit cards, and student loans. Being in debt increases the chances of someone having a higher levels of stress, which leads to anxiety and depression. And as we know, the generation today is the most stressed, the most obese, and have the highest depression and mental health issues. There is a clear link between suicide and being in debt. People who commit suicide are 8 times more likely to be in debt. Lastly, but not least, the lack of financial knowledge has an adverse impact on our young people's future, including but not limited to divorce, poor health outcomes, depression, anxiety, and bankruptcy. With that, Madam Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. We'll move into public testimony before we have member discussion. Up next on my list, I have Kim Lewis.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kimberly Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all 333 school boards across Minnesota, as well as this afternoon, I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Rural Education Association, and finally, the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. And we appreciate the opportunity to share some of our major concerns on House File 1617. We've not had the opportunity to speak directly with Representative Hassan, and we hope that we can continue to work with her as this bill travels. High school students in Minnesota have about 36 months to complete the required 22 and a half credits to graduate. Those required credits don't allow a lot of extra room for continued classes that some of these students have worked so very hard for. For instance, Spanish, they may have started and wished to continue their mastery of the language as a senior in high school. Or band or choral groups, some of the groups that have taken longer to get to, advanced mathematics, calculus, statistics, et cetera. And quite honestly, also the career and technical education, as Representative Hassan has noted, that sometimes when folks are in debt, it could be because of job loss or what have you. The CTE classes give students an opportunity to understand where their careers might lead, and they can get certifications in many cases for good paying jobs to help them not get into debt and have that baseline to move from. As Representative Hassan mentioned, economics and personal finance is very important to all of our parents. And in fact, economics or personal finance is embedded in the curriculum starting in grade 3. So it does go throughout elementary school, middle school, and high school. In high school, there are sections of personal finance in the standards where financial goals, making a financial plan, considering budgeting and asset building to meet those plans and goals are discussed and taught. Evaluating investment options such as risk, return, liquidity, et cetera, are offered. To evaluate the benefits of cost of credit and describing the three C's of credit, character, capacity, and collateral. Those are all standards that are within the economics or personal finance curriculum. A major concern of ours, schools would be required to offer this class online, would need to be state-approved online providers. And it seems that Representative Hassan's amendment may have taken care of that. But in order for a district to offer classes online, they have to be an approved vendor or an approved process, go through MDE. So in order to offer that class, they would have to go through that process. We're not sure of the definition of distance learning.
I'm sorry, Ms. Lewis, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up your testimony. We have several hands up, and we have to move forward.
Will do. In closing, I might ask that the committee take an opportunity to maybe have an informational session to look at the standards and the different roles and responsibilities of the legislature, the Minnesota Department of Education, and school boards. And we urge you to allow the school boards and administration to work locally to determine graduation requirements. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else on the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, we will move on to member discussion, and we'll be moving on this bill at 2:05 p.m. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, just to comment, this is a mandate, and it's going to be among the 75 new mandates that are in the department's policy bill or would possibly become a part of the omnibus policy bill. So Representative Hassan, even though I think your efforts are laudable, because we want our students to understand finance, budgeting, et cetera, to place another mandate in a school year, this coming school year, in which I think districts are going to have to focus on closing the achievement gap and looking at lost learning more than adding, I would ask you, you know, to think carefully about moving this forward at this point, even though it's, you know, it's certainly a good goal to have. But, you know, when we're adding that many mandates in one, you know, fell swoop of a session, you know, what can we expect to happen in our schools? There's going to be a lot of consternation about, as Ms. Lewis said, you know, this requires an approval of a course because it's done online. There's a cost to that. We have some economics in the present social studies standards that include personal finance. They supposedly will be in the revised standards, but there are some issues that we have to think about before we move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Vice Chair Hassan, any comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. You're right, there are a lot of mandates, but where this bill came from is the students. I understand that, you know, schools may not have the bandwidth to add something new right now, but when we talk to our students and we ask them what would make your education more meaningful, this is what they put in front of us. And I think we owe it to our students to follow their leadership, because so far we have failed our students. We're not, you know, providing them the education that they deserve. So that's where I'm going with this. And I have no problem with, you know, changing the date to next year and just, you know, allowing this year for schools to catch up. That's not something that I am super against. And this bill is going to another committee, so we will have a chance to have more conversation about it and amend it if we need to. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Hassan. Just a statement here. I think that we need to do something, but I fear that we won't be reaching all the students we need to reach with this bill. You know, in the bill that I have for civics, I do have a clause in there, economics or personal finance. Now, various groups have problems with that, and we may have to jettison that, but we need to find something that works. And I encourage the various groups getting together, as they have in various education policies in the past, to come up with a workable way to do this. And so I'm going to support this today to keep it moving forward, because I think it's a very important issue that we need to do something about. And through the process, through further discussion, I'm hopeful that, again, a workable solution can be reached.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill forward. I know Representative Herr had it last year, and I was glad to see that somebody introduced it again this year, and so I did sign on, and it was interesting. My adult children were here over the weekend, and I told them that I'd signed on to this bill, and I asked them what they thought, and they said that would have been the most practical course I could have taken in high school. And, you know, my kids went through college. They had some student debt. They're young adults now. They're looking into investment. I mean, it's just one of the most practical things that we could do for our kids. And so I do urge you to keep working on this. I know there's a lot of bureaucracy to cut through to get this instituted. And I think it would be good to move the effective date out probably even a couple of years, just for our kids to get a chance to catch up in school, and our schools to be able to just really focus on that right now. But I think this is a concentrated course in this, I think, is one of the best things that we could do for our students moving forward. So I'm not a fan of mandates, and I do like local control, and I think locals should have they should decide what specific curriculums to use. But I think this is one of the most valuable things we could do. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. I really like the intent of your bill for all the reasons you and others have mentioned. I think there's probably no one on this committee that disagrees with that. Question I have, and I apologize, I stepped away for another meeting briefly, but does the way it's written, does this allow those courses to, or that course to be obtained outside of school, maybe like driver's ed or something like that? Is that what you meant by online originally?
Vice Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Duszkowski. No, what we meant online at first was that it wasn't taking up space from other courses, but then we got some concerns from some groups that said a requirement for online is hard on some schools, so we said that it could either be an online class or it could be in-person or hybrid, however the school. We want to leave those details to local control and the schools to decide, but that's what the online version mostly meant, that we wanted to be sure that it's not taking up space from other courses and it was just an alternative that's available online.
Representative Duszkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. I love this approach of thinking about personal finance for all the practical and other matters that have been talked about. I just hope we can do it, as mentioned earlier. I don't know that I can support another mandate going forward on our schools, but like Representative Erdahl, I'll certainly support it today and hope that we can find a way. Representative Hassan, are there some mandates we can get rid of in order to bring this forward? Just something to think about. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Representative Duszkowski. Vice Chair Hassan, I will give you the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, everyone, for the conversation. From what I'm taking away from this hearing, that this is important, and it's important to our students, important to us, and to many of the parents of, of our students. So I am open to, Ramsey Erickson echoed on adding a new, something new this year because of all the challenges that our students are facing. I'm open to the idea of postponing it, changing the date to a different date, but this is not the end of it. I'll see many of you guys in education finance and we'll have more discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Hassan renews her motion to re-refer House File 1617 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Duszkowski?
Aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bo? Excused. Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Poston, aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 18 ayes and zero nays.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and congratulations, Vice Chair Hassan. You are on your way to education finance. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 1083. Representative Moeller, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I move that House File 1083 be recommended to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Moeller, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So House File 1083 creates a lead position at MDE to assist school districts in assessing their response to student mental health and to develop evidence-based practices. As somebody who lost a close teenage family friend to suicide in 2017, I understand that student mental health is in a state of crisis. And even before the pandemic, every educator I talked to said that students were experiencing growing mental health needs and that those needs were not being met. Students have also been telling us that this is a problem. In 2020, suicide was the second leading cause of death for young people. The 2019 student survey indicated a growing number of students who felt depressed and anxious, and an alarming rate of students who had seriously contemplated suicide. And this was before the pandemic. In 2019, I had the opportunity to attend an NCSL suicide prevention convening, and I learned that many other states had a better response to student mental health needs, including a position similar to the one we are creating with this bill. The Comprehensive Student Mental Health Services Lead will be able to assist school districts by assessing the quality of their school mental health systems, collecting local, state, and national mental health resources, and providing that information to our schools, and sharing evidence-based strategies with districts, along with other information about available grants, training for teachers, staff, and mental health curricula for students. Those of you who were on this committee last year may recall that this bill was heard right before the pandemic on the evening of March 10th. It had bipartisan support and has been improved in the interim with the assistance of MDE, who I want to thank for their help. They're available for questions today. In addition, this bill has the strong support of NAMI, and Sue Abderholden is also available for questions. The Minnesota School Counselors Association, Education Minnesota, Ed Allies, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, and the Hopkins Schools LAC have all indicated their support. There are several letters of support in your packets. Madam Chair, I have one testifier today, and that is Amy Jones.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Amy Jones, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right, I think we're okay now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my apologies. Sorry about that. Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me testify today. My name is Amy Jones. I'm an educational consultant. I work in the area of improving mental health for students and school staff in Minnesota schools. I'm an appointed member of the State Advisory on Mental Health and the Mental Health in Schools Work Group. I'm also a licensed teacher and have worked in Minnesota public education for over 28 years. In addition, I served two terms on the Mount Juice School Board and have spent much of my tenure advocating for improved mental health in our district. Representative Mueller and I have been working to provide more mental health support in Minnesota schools after seeing a growing and timely need. House File 1083 would put Minnesota in line with other states that have a mental health in schools lead or director position in their Department of Education. We are one of only six states as of the last legislative session that did not have such a position in their state's Department of Education. This position would not be tied to overseeing a grant. Rather, it would provide a much-needed contact person to address the many challenges and opportunities currently facing our school staff and students' mental health. I hear from students, teachers, principals, superintendents, and school board members every week. They are all telling me the same story. They know that students and teachers are struggling with deteriorating and pervasive mental health challenges, and they don't know who to contact at MDE. These challenges make teaching and learning much more difficult. The Comprehensive School Mental Health Services Lead position at MDE would serve as a source of information and support for all of our stakeholders. They could identify and scale up some of the innovative practices that already exist in some of our districts. As a state, we can do better for all of our students and school staff to help support and address improved mental health in our schools. This MDE position would connect mental health expertise with the teaching and learning expertise. This position could help teachers as we hopefully move toward requiring mental health education, as well as disseminating information, training, and resources to address the most common mental health and school challenges, which are anxiety and depression. There are specific instructional practices that we can implement that could benefit all students. This information needs to be shared, and this position could help with that. This position is long overdue, and if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has illuminated this glaring and growing need to improve mental health in our schools. Our students and school staff deserve this support. I thank you for your time, and I hope for your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else signed on to the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, we will go to member discussion. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for the author of the bill. You know, recently we sent the suicide prevention to the Department of Health. So why are we creating this lead position in the Department of Education when the Department of Health is what licenses our mental health counselors and I think has much greater expertise to work with NAMI and with our school districts when it comes to mental health. Why did you choose the Department of Education?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for that question. I actually met with folks from that group in the Department of Health when this bill was being, when we were talking about this bill. And it really was decided to be within the Department of Education because it's our school districts who are really needing this support and information. And you'll see in our bill, we actually have that this position would be also consulting with the Department of Health. I mean, this is one of those areas that crosses over into multiple agencies, and it just highlights the very important need that we have to have one person that's really helping to coordinate these efforts for our school districts. I know Sue Abderholden from NAMI is here, and I don't know if she wanted to add anything to that, Madam Chair.
Ms. Abderholden, did you have anything to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, Sue Abderholden, NAMI, Minnesota. So the Department of Health does focus a lot on suicide prevention, and of course the Cognito program is suicide prevention. This is actually broader, kind of including mental health and mental illness and suicide prevention. And while this lead person may not and probably would not know everything, they would know how to connect someone. So, for example, one of the big questions we actually get to us, and usually traveling through, you know, several different either family members or counselors, is what do you do after a suicide? And often, frankly, people do the wrong thing and we promote contagion. And so if the districts knew there was someone within the Department of Ed that they could contact to find out the correct information, you know, what to do, how to refer people, things like that, I think that would really help. Often districts just aren't sure who to call. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I still hope that Representative Mueller will consider either a joint operation between health and MDE or some other kind of tight relationship, because really, in listening to Ms. Abderholden talk about the suicide prevention and the deep connection that has in the Department of Health, I think we're doing our students and our school districts and charters a disservice if we don't have that expertise. So I certainly support this, but I think that we need to reconsider how this plays out for our school districts and charters, in that the licensing of mental health is done through the Department of Health. And I think that counselors who have that expertise need to be more connected with the Department of Health and the Department of Education. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Mueller, I will give you the final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks again for your comments, Representative Erickson. And again, just to note that Subdivision 3 of this bill does really have this position coordinating with a lot of different agencies, because this crosses into so many different areas. And I know that members of this committee are concerned about student mental health issues and want to do the right things by our students. I also, Madam Chair, just because we talked about suicide, wanted to just give the Suicide Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-8255, or texting MN to 741741, just because I think it's important for people to know when we're talking about these issues that there is help available for individuals who are struggling. And with that, members, I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller renews her motion to re-refer House File 1083 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Drozdowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe, excused. Representative Christensen? Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist? Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Representative Christensen? Representative Feist?
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 16 ayes and one nay.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And with that, the motion passes. Congratulations, Representative Mueller. Finally, on our agenda, we have House File 1081. I will move House File 1081 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. This is a technical bill that will serve as the vehicle for the omnibus bill next week. There'll be a DE amendment posted at least 24 hours before the Wednesday hearing, where we'll do a walkthrough of the bill and take public testimony. Friday, we will do the markup and take amendments and move the bill to education finance. Ms. Parra, can you briefly walk us through the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. This bill strikes an obsolete reference to when the Department of Education was first required to report on schools identified as high-performing under federal expectations, and also strikes the reference to the federal expectations. Under the No Child Left Behind Act, which was the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, there were federal expectations for student achievement and testing. Minnesota, along with other states, had a waiver from certain NCLB requirements, and the waiver required Minnesota to create a rating system that recognized schools for high performance and for needing improvement. The Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA, which replaced No Child Left Behind, shifted that and required states instead to develop accountability systems that identify schools for differentiated levels of support based on student performance on the indicators that each state selects in its ESSA plan. ESSA does not require states to identify schools as high performing, hence the striking out of federal expectations.
Thank you, Ms. Parra. Is there anyone logged on to the Zoom who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Hearing none, any questions from members? Hearing none, House File 1081 is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus, and there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.